Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
And now the cricket revolution. In the first of two programmes, David Goldblatt explores the recent arrival on the sporting scene of 2020 cricket, a shorter, faster form of this ancient game. He asks if it's going to change cricket forever.
This is old school cricket. I'm at Lord's in North London, still the home of cricket, and today is the first day of the first test match of the cricket season, England versus the West Indies. 5 days of cricket stretch before us, and the crowd is slowly filtering in, beginning to fill the stands, and we're just settling down for what is going to be a very long and lovely day of cricket.
5 days of cricket, 5 days of competition and no guarantee of a result. Test matches often result in a draw. Yet amongst the established traditional audience, the test match is considered precious, the very highest form of the sporting art. It is, especially in England, a social and a sporting occasion, a gathering of the many strands of the cricket tribe. Old men in flannels and boaters, bankers on a day out, picnicking families and a good sprinkling of British Asians and Caribbeans steeped in cricketing culture. Christopher Martin Jenkins, a journalist and commentator, puts the occasion in literary terms.
The absolute testing of every faculty of a cricketer, his character, his courage, his technical ability, the whole thing is like a convoluted novel compared to a very short story.
For the crowd, the test match offers narrative elegance, surprise and wonder. Paul Collingwood, an England cricketer, has experienced that drama on stage, and for him, the test match is an epic.
For me as a player, I think the longer form of the game tests more and more of your mental kind of toughness, and I think that's the thing that I wanted to challenge myself with, is being mentally tough and make sure I can get through the hard periods when you're tired, when you're on the fifth day and it's getting tough and you come up against one of the best bowlers in the world. This is when you're really getting tested at its limit, and that's why it's called Test Cricket.
Win, lose or draw, the Test match can serve as a backdrop, a dramatic device against which the complexities of human psychology, will and emotion can be explored. Tony Cozier, a Barbadian journalist who has covered West Indies cricket for nearly half a century.
A five-day match where you get fluctuating fortunes, players show their stamina, their commitment, their character comes out over the 5 days.
Despite the claims of the traditionalists, most people, perhaps most cricket fans, find that Test cricket simply moves too slowly. A game forged in the 18th century now appears ponderous and over-elaborate to the 21st. But change is coming.
Boys in yellow, come out and play. Gotta make him follow you, lead the way. Say S-U-P-E.
The traditional forms of the game are being challenged by a new cut-down and jazzed-up version of the sport called 2020, played at a brisk tempo and to a definitive conclusion in just 3 hours. The established political powers that have run cricket are under assault from the modernising juggernaut that is Indian commercialism. Together, these new forces threaten nothing less than a cricket revolution. In this two-part series for the BBC, I'll be tracing that revolution from its unlikely origins on the south coast of England to the TV screens of India, and asking who will win the battle between the forces of tradition and modernisation. What will be won and what will be lost?
I'm at the Rose Bowl, the home of Hampshire County Cricket Club. And here, in June 2003, the very first game of professional 2020 cricket was played.
The first game was Hampshire against Sussex. And I will never forget watching the first ball bowled, standing outside these windows right here, and I saw James Kirtley bowl the first ball, and it was wide.
Stuart Robertson is the man who invented 2020 cricket.
So there's this huge, enormous sort of crescendo, and all the result of all of this incredible hard work. And the first ball was a wide, but then what he did, he turned around and ran back to his mark to bowl the ball again, because he knew that this was a faster game, and we'd put a lot of effort and time into speeding everything up. So at that point, I knew that the players had got this. So I think we were off to a flyer and not really looked back.
That game was the culmination of a year's work. Robertson, then the commercial director of the England and Wales Cricket Board, had been asked to find out why attendances for domestic cricket in the UK were in freefall.
In a nutshell, the answer was that cricket was too inaccessible. People were telling us cricket was played at a time and when they were at school or at work. A lot of the audiences that we wanted to see coming into cricket, younger audiences, families and the rest, couldn't get to that form of cricket. So we said to these people, OK, so if we played cricket in a format that lasted less than 3 hours and we played it after school and after work in midweek or at the weekends, would you come along to that? And a lot of people said, yes, we would.
So Stuart Robertson and the ECB gave them what they wanted, reducing the game to just 20 overs a side, hence the name, and a match to just 3 hours. But 2020 was always more than a format. It was a brand and a product. Alongside making the game shorter, Robertson and his team added post-work starting times, gaudy team names, amplified music, and a touch of the village fete or the town fair. And as they had promised, the audience did come, and in numbers not seen in England for decades. The international cricket authorities weren't far behind, and in 2007, just 3 years after the format had been launched, the ICC, the International Cricket Council, organised the first 2020 World Cup in South Africa, and the money came raining down. India, easily the largest cricket market in the world, had till then ignored 2020. Then it saw its team win a surprise victory in the 2007 World Cup and acquire a TV audience of hundreds of millions. Driven by the verve and energy characteristic of contemporary Indian entrepreneurs, a new 2020 competition, the Indian Premier League, was ready to start just a few months later in early 2008. India loved it.
DLF Indian Premier League pesh karte hain cricket ka karm yuddh.
Short version of the game, 2020. It's the future of cricket, there's no doubt about it. Short time and excitement. None of that slow, boring test match cricket. So it's the excitement which keeps us going.
It's short, it's quick, it's fast, it's for today's generation. I just love it.
I'm at the oldest cricket club in India, the Calcutta Cricket and Football Club, founded in 1792. And there's quite a party atmosphere this evening as people gather to watch the first day of the IPL. So we're sitting here in one of the bars with a huge screen and a crowd has gathered to watch Bangalore versus the Rajasthan Royals.
I think it's because it's so short and exciting in a short time. I mean, someone like my daughter, who's about 12, who wouldn't watch cricket even a one-day side before, last year was hooked onto IPL, like the entire family is watching together, because we can watch over dinner or whatever, short time, and it's very exciting.
Given a potential Indian audience of hundreds of millions, and many more globally, the IPL has acquired TV rights income and sponsorship deals that dwarf any previous cricket tournament. The city-based franchises have become the sporting trophies of Bollywood film stars and Indian conglomerates, the most expensive costing over $100 million. Players from all over the world were auctioned off to the highest bidders and paid wages that no professional cricketer had ever seen before.
Went for $400,000 to Team Calcutta. Brackley, Australian player from New South Wales, a bowler, his minimum price was $300,000 and went for $900,000 to Team Mohali.
The IPL shows no sign of letting up, despite the fact that this year, for its second season, it had to be relocated. Security concerns in India became so great that the whole circus moved out to South Africa. The IPL's chairman and moving force, Lalit Modi, had captivated and cajoled India's cricketing, corporate, Bollywood and TV elites. He certainly wasn't going to be put off by the mere problem of moving the IPL across the Indian Ocean.
I know there will be a lot of disappointment that the Indian Premier League is not taking place in India this year. But being in South Africa will enable our fans to watch the matches live on their TV screens in India. We are going to ensure that the broadcast is at prime time in India at 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. Indian Standard Time, and it'll be also prime time at the same time in South Africa.
This was an entrepreneurial feat of the highest order. The IPL was an instant hit in South Africa, with tickets selling out for the opening weekend almost immediately. The whole enterprise was emblematic of a new, confident, outward-looking India. Malavika Banerjee, a Calcutta-based sports agent, emphasises the importance of this.
There's a sense of pride associated with the IPL. You know, it had to shift out, unfortunately, this year. But that brings something as well, because when people see even South Africa taking to the tournament so with open arms, they feel this is an Indian product, and for once we are outsourcing instead of being the outsourcing hub in a way. You know, we have sent this tournament there and they've embraced it with open arms. It's great pride for India in that sense.
The IPL is a measure of India's growing international economic importance and reach, but its success suggests that India's impact on the world will be cultural as well. The IPL has taken 2020 from its beginnings in England and made it a truly Indian experience. Rudrangshu Mukherjee of the Calcutta Telegraph explains.
In Bengali or even in Hindi, we have this term called tamasha. The best way to define it is sort of a merging of spectacle and carnival. And 2020 actually gives that sense of a tamasha. And that's one of the reasons for its great success, I think.
The IPL has unleashed the commercial power of India's entrepreneurs and market and stamped the country's tastes and preferences on the new world of cricket. Faced with this, the traditionalists are at best ambivalent. Tony Kozier, the West Indian commentator.
I was there for the first one and I thought it was really exciting, tremendous, providing real entertainment for the crowds, big crowds in India. Atmosphere was great, 2020 cricket, entertainment, but not cricket. It was not cricket. It was bat and ball. It was batsmen hitting sixes and bowlers, great bowlers, being confined to four overs.
Some of the old guard are even more dismissive. The ex-Australian wicketkeeper, Rod Marsh, became a legendary name, devoting most of his career to Test cricket in the 1970s. I asked him what he made of the IPL.
You're probably asking the wrong bloke, because I didn't see a ball bowled, apart from news highlights. I had no desire to watch it, because to me it's glorified club cricket with international players playing a shortened version of the game. I mean, great for them, great for the players to get a big paycheck, and great for the public of India. But, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I didn't make too much of it at all.
Traditionalists, like Rod Marsh, may not have made much of it, but that barely matters, because the cricket revolution is being shaped by the mass audience rather than the connoisseurs, by Indian tastes rather than English or Australian preferences, and increasingly by the players rather than the administrators. Julian Hunt, president of the West Indies Cricket Board, has some sympathy for players who want to earn money.
When players are offered large sums of money to play, you know, you sometimes are in sympathy with them if the feeling is that, look, this is a short life and, you know, let me make as much money as I can while it's available.
It's already happening. Last month, Chris Gayle, captain of the West Indies team, arrived in England just 2 days before the first day of a test match at Lord's. He had been playing cricket in the IPL up to the very last moment. 2 days' preparation was considered by traditionalists, like Christopher Martin Jenkins, to be inappropriate behaviour at best, an act of contempt at worst.
That's just not acceptable. That is a case of Test cricket being subordinated when it should be superior.
Gayle proceeded to ruffle more feathers when he said in a newspaper interview that he wouldn't be sad if Test match cricket were to disappear altogether. He later clarified his remarks to the BBC's Jonathan Agnew.
I think Test cricket will always be there, but you know, no doubt about it, the 2020 actually come on board and, you know, make a big impression on a lot of people. You know, people who haven't watched cricket before, you know, start watching cricket.
People might think that international captains should be actually looking after Test cricket for the future generations, talking it up, doing your best that you can for it.
It's hard to say, to be honest with you, you know, but if you check any youngster now, they're not going to talk about Test cricket these days, to be honest with you, and that's a fact.
And if kids can see which way the revolution is going, so too can professional players. Paul Collingwood, who was part of an IPL squad this year and is also captain of the England 2020 team, acknowledges that with the format appealing to fans and the wages appealing to players, 2020's popularity has been rising since that first ball was bowled in 2003.
I think 2020 cricket at the time was probably seen as a bit of a hit and giggle, but it's certainly become a lot more serious, probably in terms of competition, in terms of the money that's been rewarded for the winners of 2020 competitions. So the whole kind of format of the game has really, you know, escalated so much over the last 6 years. It's become frighteningly fantastic to watch and very competitive.
Revolutions invariably come at a cost. In the headlong rush to 2020, is there still space and time for anyone to watch or care for Test cricket? This year, England is hosting both the 2020 World Cup and the Ashes, a five-match contest between England and Australia, the most venerable and celebrated of all Test match series. It owes its name to a mock obituary and a funeral ceremony held for English cricket after England were first beaten on home soil by Australia in 1882.
The bails are removed by umpire Bowden. He throws one in the air, and England have won the Ashes. Finally, in the most bizarre ending, I'll let the crowd speak for themselves.
The English crowds love the Ashes, but what about the administrators? I met the chairman of the England and Wales Cricket Board, Giles Clark, in a noisy restaurant at Lord's.
At the end of this cricket season, if you had a choice between claiming the Ashes or the 2020 World Cup for England, what would you prefer?
The Ashes.
Why?
It's by a mile the most important competition from our point of view and every single England supporter. There's no question that it's the most important competition that we're playing in this year.
And what makes it important? Is it just finance? Is it history? Is there something else?
Firstly, it's the history of the competition. It is the one series every single Englishman and woman wants us to win. It's the one every single player wants to play in the winning team of. It's the most difficult to win.
And is that also about the nature of the format, that it offers a more satisfying victory, if you like?
Yes, it requires a great deal. To beat Australia over five tests, over 25 days of immensely hard cricket, it's a very, very demanding thing.
One thing Giles Clark was not prepared to talk about was Alan Stanford, a now disgraced American financier who once looked like the saviour of English cricket. With the loyalty of England's top cricketers being tested by the riches available in India, the English governing body desperately needed an alternative payday for their players if it was to maintain its control of them. Stanford offered them a deal and an audacious vision of the commercial future of the game.
2020 can become the team sport of the world, replacing soccer. I think it can become, it has the potential to be the most popular team sport in the whole world in maybe less than 10 years.
Even the traditionalists of the ECB were ready to take a punt on this kind of modernisation. Stanford, who had already underwritten 2020 in the Caribbean and audaciously planned to take it to the American market as well, then backed a series of matches between the West Indies and England. In an act of characteristically crass commercialism, the winner of each of these games would receive $1 million a man, and the losers, nothing.
Flint off bowls, and Gale smashes that away down to long on. That's it! He's finished it with a six. And it's the end of a, well, always controversial, but in its own way, an historic match. The first of its kind, not to everybody's taste, but it's certainly to the taste of those West Indian players who are now each $1 million better off.
Stanford appeared to see the event not only as great publicity for himself, but after a long fallow era, a relaunch of West Indian cricket too.
Let me say this. Our cricket in the Caribbean is back! Back!
It was, but not for long. Stanford's fortunes and public profile disintegrated as the global financial crisis exposed the probity and frailty of his economic empire, and the American financial authorities sought his arrest. His involvement with cricket was sharply terminated. For many amongst the traditional cricketing establishment, Stanford's version of the game was vulgar and brash. But even they can see that to leave the test match format untouched, whatever its narrative and aesthetic pleasures, leaves it exposed. What can be done? Giles Clark, chairman of the ECB, seems keen for changes to be made and puts the ball firmly in the court of the international governing body.
There are issues that test match cricket faces worldwide, absolutely right. It's an ICC problem, as I see it, and I'm a director of the ICC. And we as administrators have to look at how tickets are sold, how we attract people. The time that the games are played, it may well be that floodlit cricket is a way forward in some countries for test cricket.
For some countries, read India, where attendances at test matches are often minuscule and where over 80% of the global game's money and audience now lie. In cricket, like every other commercial sport, in commercial sport, like every other big business, those with the money and the market share call the shots. Malavika Banerjee, the Calcutta-based sports agent again.
As far as sponsorship of test series will go, they'll have enough sponsorship for test cricket, and you know, which will be like an add-on to the shorter versions of the game. So if you're sponsoring in cricket during the IPL, you could, you know, have a spillover to test cricket. But yes, it's slowly becoming the younger brother in a way.
Not everyone is so optimistic. Rudrangshu Mukherjee of the Calcutta Telegraph speaks more bluntly about the future of tests in India.
The fate of test cricket, alas, is very gloomy. I wouldn't be surprised if it dies down completely, because spectator interest is declining. Television interest is declining. I don't think test cricket gets that many sponsors on television or draws that kind of advertisements either. And it'll just, like a good loyal soldier, it'll just fade away.
Whichever of these two opinions is right, it seems certain that the fate of test cricket will not be determined by the traditionalist crowd and administrators at Lord's, but by the commercial needs of Indian corporations and the preferences of Indian consumers. And whatever kind of cricket they are watching, that is a revolution in itself. Cricket, once the most English and parochial of games, is now on its way to becoming a part of the global entertainment industry. Next week, in part two of The Cricket Revolution, I'll be looking at how the game is seeking new territories and new markets, how cricket is trying to crack China, and how this too will change the game forever.
The Cricket Revolution was written and presented by David Goldblatt. The producer was Tim Mansell.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.